Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at ThomisticInstitute.org.
St. Thomas describes creation in the following way. Everything that is in any way whatsoever is from God. This is his succinct way of describing creatio ex nihilo, a creation from nothing. So we're going to explore what creation from nothing is like philosophically from a metaphysical perspective tonight. And in that way, we're going to ask ourselves the question, what relation do we have to our Creator? What does God have to do with us? And hopefully we'll see by the end of tonight that he has quite a lot to do with us, at least according to St. Thomas Aquinas. Now, St. Thomas describes the act of creation as the emanation of being from God, who is subsistent being itself, or being itself subsisting. You can think of this as the philosophical complement of the name of God communicated to Moses in the book of Exodus. When Moses asks God what is his proper name, God says, I am who I am, or I will be who I will be, or I am what I am, or I will be what I will be. And then when the sacred scriptures repeat this throughout the Old Testament, they repeat it simply as the I am. And when we have Lord in subscript in the Old Testament, what it's communicating to us there is the divine name I am. Now the philosophical referent for that for St. Thomas Aquinas is God is being itself, subsisting through itself, or he is being by essence. And therefore, God is the everything. He is the infinite fullness of being, an infinite perfection of being, including himself, everything. And beyond God, there is nothingness. So when God creates, he creates out of himself. And this is an emanation of being from him as first cause. And therefore, all things that are bear being in likeness to their first cause, God. Now, nothing is exactly like God. God does not and indeed cannot create another divine being. There is only one God. And when he creates us like him, but also unlike him. And our likeness and unlikeness to him is found in our essence. The essence of creatures is a determination of their being as a kind of likeness to God with a certain range of perfections. Now, in the natural created world, the human being bears the greatest kind of essence, an essence that includes in itself all other realms of being. We are material bodies like rocks. We are living like plants. We are sensate and motile like animals, and we are rational like angels. And so in the human essence is contained all of these different strata of being. But nonetheless, humans need not have been. We are not necessary. There could have been a reality without human, or indeed without anything else than God. So when God creates out of himself, he creates this emanation of being that comes forth from him, and we bear that being in ourself. We have been actualized in being because God chose to do so. Now, this actualization in being is quite interesting for St. Thomas. A moment ago, I mentioned that the human essence need not have been. There need not have been humanity. And indeed, this is true of everything we come across whatsoever. There is nothing you've ever come across that must have been. Or perhaps you can suggest if you find something like that. But there's nothing I've ever come across that must have been. It could have been otherwise. The different kinds of things and the different individuals and their kind. Now, this fact reveals to St. Thomas that when the Creator creates, he doesn't just initiate being, like way back when at the Big Bang, or even back at the beginning of each of our lives. Rather, he gifts being in the act of creation and continually conserves what he creates in being. Because being is not proper to us, we have to continually receive it. Just like light is not proper to the air, it has to be continually illuminated for it to be bright. So too, the act of creation is like this. It's first of all an act of the gift of being that initiates a creature, but then God conserves that creature by giving being perpetually to it as it endures in being. And so this is creation from nothing and a preservation or conservation in being. Now that means that God has created me and you at a certain moment in human history, and he is continually creating us at this moment by conserving us in being. Now these two things we need to remember, creation from nothing and this conservation in being. Now when St. Thomas considers the act of creation, he considers it from two perspectives. The active perspective is the divine act. God acts out of himself when he creates creatures. The passive perspective is the creature itself, the creature that comes into being. Now, since it's a creation from nothing, God doesn't take wood over here and make it into something over here. There's no material of creation. It's an emanation out of himself. And that means the act of creation, passively considered, is coincident with our being. The act of creation, passively considered, is coincident with our being. Now think of this. Imagine if you could act out of yourself and bring about something, produce a product by your activity. There would be no difference between the act that brings it about and the thing that is brought about. It doesn't adhere and rest upon something else. Like if I were to create a table, I would take some wood and I'd shape and structure it into the table form, and then the table would stand over there in distinction. But imagine if I could just create a product out of myself as this emanation of being. It doesn't rest upon anything different than my activity. And so passively considered, the act of creation is nothing other than the creature. The act of creation is nothing other than your being. Now this is incredibly significant because this means that our being, what we are, everything we have, and everything we do rests upon God's creative act and his corresponding conservation act. And this means that we stand in relation to our Creator through our very existence. That we are, what we are, everything we have, all of our activity is our relation to God. It's a relation of absolute dependence upon God. Being is that which is innermost to each creature. Being is that which is innermost to each one of us. And that being is received by us according to the Creator's act. And we don't rest upon anything exterior to that act. We rest upon that act and our reception of it. And so our very existence is our relation to God. Now think about that for a moment. Your very existence is your relation to God. You don't have to search for your relation to God outside of you. You are his creature, and his creative act has brought about everything that you are. And therefore, everything that you are rests upon his creative act. You are your relation to God. Your very existence is your relation to God. And this is true of all things. This is true of everything. But the human creature is the only creature in the natural world that can receive this bestowal of being according to its proper proportions. That is, we're the only creature in the natural world that can understand what God has done because we're intelligent and can freely accept what God has done because we've got a freedom of choice, a freedom of will. And therefore, this bestowal of being, we can see, is for our sake. Every other creature receives its being and stands in being in relation to the Creator, just like we do, but there's no comprehension and there's no free acceptance. They just are and they're there. But we can come to recognize that the Creator has created us. We can come to understand his creative act. We can then correspond with this recognition and understanding and act of acceptance. And this act of acceptance attains its fullness only when we take joy in the gift that has been given. To be is a great gift. To be is good. That's Shakespearean question in Hamlet. To be or not to be, that is the question. And indeed, even if Shakespeare was not aware of this, it is the question, and it is the question upon which everything else depends. If God, indeed is being itself subsisting, and if we have being by his creative act, and if being is innermost to us, and if our being is the act of all of our acts and the perfection of all our perfections, To be or not to be is the question. To be is good. It is good to be. And therefore, the natural answer to the question, to be or not to be, is yes. Being is good. I wish to be. Fortunately, Hamlet chose to be when he was contemplating suicide as he was dialoguing or monologuing in the play. He said yes to being. He said yes to it because he was scared, but he still said yes to it. We can say yes to it because we're scared of the alternative, but we can also say yes to it because it is good to be. It is a joy to be. Now let's set this up by thinking of it in some degree of contrast with our kind of gift giving. When we give gifts, the gift giver, just say it's me, the gift receiver, just say it's Adam, and the gift, my precious bottle of water, all have existence. But the creative act is very different. As a creatio ex nihilo, a creation from nothing, as an emanation of being, there is just the gift giver. There is just the gift giver before the act. And in the act of giving the gift receiver comes into being, and the gift receiver is nothing else than the very gift itself. So God's creative act is like our kind of gift giving, but it's also unlike it. It's a radical act of gift giving. It's an act wherein the receiver of the gift and the gift itself come into being as this act of emanation. And it is good to be. Indeed, in Genesis, when it reveals to us that God creates, what does God do? God beholds what he has created and says, indeed, it is good. And when he creates the human creature, he says, indeed, it is good, good, or very good in our English translation. It is good to be. And so when we come to recognize this, when we come to understand it, when we come to accept it by recognizing its goodness, when we come to take joy in it, then we receive the gift from the Creator. If Adam had rudely refused my precious bottle of water, if he'd said, that's not good, do not give me that gift, I do not take joy in it, it would be a rejection of the gift. And therefore, the reception of the gift is simply our taking joy in the gift. So, let's see where we came from. The act of creation is an emanation of being. Because there's no matter that God uses to produce the product, his act of creation, passively considered, just is the creature. In this gift of being, he creates a thing that has being, and being means everything to that creature. It's the act of all its acts, the perfection of all its perfections. We're the kind of creature that can recognize this, understand it, accept it, and rejoice in it, and therefore we can understand that he has given us this gift. He has given us the gift of all things. He has given us the gift of ourselves. And the way we receive that gift is we take joy in it. This is a sign that we have received it in our gratitude. Our gratitude attained its completion in our joy taking. This is why the practice of Christians to pray grace before meals is particularly significant. Often we pass through this activity as if it's just another activity of the day and we don't even pay attention to it. But what we're doing at that moment is we're attending to the fact that he's our creator. He has given us being, life, and he now gives us this food, and we're turning our thought to him to recognize that this is the case. And so it's actually a profound act, a moment each day, three times a day, or maybe six times a day, where we can turn our hearts and minds to God in recognition and rejoicing in this. Now, when we see this, we see that there's really no distance separating us from the Creator, from our perspective. But it's also like that from the Creator's perspective. How do we know this? Well, God is an intelligent being. God is a free, willing being. And therefore, when he creates out of his wisdom. And when he creates out of his love. He thoughtfully wills things to be. There are many possible things that could have been that he didn't create. He has thoughtfully willed certain things to be. He has thoughtfully willed certain individuals to be. And so all things have arisen out of his wise love. Now, since God, as being itself, is immutable and eternal, this means that his wise love is from eternity. Even though creatures have a temporal span, a beginning, a course of being, and for some an end, the Creator's thoughtful will for those creatures does not have a temporal span. It is from eternity. He never did not think about creation. He never did not will creation. God, as the fullness of being itself, has created out of himself as this unchanging eternal being who has unchanging eternal thoughts. And what he creates has a changeability and a temporality, but his thought of it does not have this. Now, the closest we can come to understanding this is to think of a musical composition. For many years, I lived in Austria. Mozart is a great Austrian composer, an incredibly gifted composer who could understand music in one whole seamless concept, one whole seamless idea. Now, notice music plays out through time. If all of the notes of a composition played at one moment, then it would be just a loud bang. Music has to play out through time. But that does not mean that the idea of the composer plays out through time. The idea can be held in an instant, even though the musical composition plays out through time. Now, this is like the Creator's act. He holds the idea of creatures from all eternity. He creates at a certain moment, and creatures have a certain span of life, a certain span of being, but his thought is not like this. His thought is one and simple. Now, that means that from all eternity, God has thoughtfully willed each one of us to be. And his thoughtful will is so faithful that we don't even notice it. Indeed, if he were to cease, by hypothesis, to thoughtfully will anything to be, at that very instant, that thing would annihilate. It would go into nothingness. It would cease to be. And remember, this follows upon that very simple metaphysical realization that nothing that we know is necessary. And if it is, there must be a why that it is. It must be given being. It must be conserved in being. It's conserved in being by the thoughtful will of God from all eternity with absolute fidelity. Now, when we see this, we see that not only is there no distance separating each one of us from God from our perspective, there's no distance separating God from us from his perspective. Everything that I am, everything and what I am, everything that I have, every activity has come forth as part of his creative act. And he understands it all much better than I understand it. I barely understand myself. Sometimes I don't know what I'm doing. And I certainly don't understand my bodily being. I don't understand the depth of my soul, and I don't even understand this body. I'm not a biologist. But it has all come forth from him. It has all come forth from him as his thought and his will. And this means he understands it from the inside out. He understands me and he understands you entirely from the inside out. Always already, the whole span of our lives, it's before him in one simple understanding. So there is, on the divine perspective, the active act of creation, no distance separating God from you. God, so to speak, touches us to the very core of our being. And so St. Thomas here has given us a wonderful way to metaphysically understand what Augustine gives us to us poetically when he says, God is more inward to me than my innermost. God is more inward to me than my innermost, because he is the one that has thoughtfully willed me to be, and I would be nothing without this. Now, let's move it forward a little bit. Notice that if God is the everything, there is nothing beyond him that is motivating his act. He is everything in himself and therefore had no reason to create except an act of pure gratuitousness. That is, a gift giving that's entirely motivated in an altruistic way. He creates entirely for the sake of the creature. If he is the everything, he gains nothing by his act of creation. And therefore, his act of creation is entirely for the sake of the creature with whom he is intimate to. A creature that is not in any way distant from him. And so we can understand creation then as a radical gift-giving of the Creator that's focused upon us in an utterly altruistic way. It's all for our sake. It's all for the sake of the creature. Now, when we see this, we see that it is the utter foolishness of the human creature that doesn't come to recognize this as the case. doesn't come to seek some understanding of it, doesn't seek some acceptance of it, and doesn't learn to take some joy in it. Now, why then is this difficult for us? Well, this is difficult for us simply because we suffer. Suffering brings us face to face with the question, is it good to be? Is God really the source of my being? Is God really good? Is there actually a God? When we suffer, what we do is we face evil and we bear the consequences of evil. Evil is the cause of our suffering, both natural evil and moral evil. And so we suffer in the face of evil. And when we experience evil, we cannot flee it. And when we cannot flee it, it's there before us as our pain and our sorrow. And this makes it difficult to recognize, understand, accept, and take joy in being. And therefore, the problem of evil and the consequent problem of suffering is really the problem we're dealing with in relation to God. Because without this problem, our experience of being and life and everything else would be wholly and seamlessly good. And we'd easily refer our thought to the Creator, we'd easily recognize this good that He's given us, and would easily return in gratitude. Therefore, the problem of evil is a mystery to us. It's an existential conundrum that we experience day by day. Now, in the Catholic tradition and the Christian tradition, the way the problem of evil is answered by God is precisely through the person of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ became man, walked among us, bore the cost of evil, suffered it unto death, even death on the cross, and then showed us that not even this thwarts God's purposes. He enters into our suffering by taking our evil upon himself, and then he brings it to completion by his resurrection and his ascension. And so the answer to the problem of evil that we face as creatures is Christianity, is Jesus Christ, is his life, death, and resurrection. God has shown us that he does not remain aloof from the suffering of his creatures, but has rather entered into it. In this way, he shows us that we can also face evil and suffer it, while maintaining a recognition of the goodness of being, of the goodness of the gift of the Creator, of the goodness of the giver that is the Father, that is our Creator. Now, this solves the theoretical problem of evil, but existentially we'll still all face it. I could have this wonderful Thomistic metaphysics, and together with it, this Thomistic understanding of the Incarnation, and nonetheless, when I wake up tomorrow and something is wrong in life, I'll throw all of the toys out of the pram and I'll create a fuss. Do you have that saying in the North? Throw the toys out of the pram? That is, whenever I face any difficulty whatsoever, my first reaction is to respond to it. However, if I learn to become somewhat mature, I learn to be able to deal with the evil that I encounter, both natural and moral, and suffer it while maintaining this stance. It is good to be. I take joy in being. And therefore, I will live out of this goodness and live out of this joy. Now, for any of you who are familiar with the Psalms of the Church, you see that this is what the Psalms counsel for us. The Psalms teach us how to pray like this. I spent a number of years in seminary, and one of the best parts of it was not just the friendships I made, but it was praying the divine office over many years and consigning Psalms to memory through that practice, such that now when I face problems, various lines come up. Lines that come up that express the lamentation of the problem, is honest before the suffering of evil, and yet still takes joy in life. Can I be mature enough to praise God in the face of all of this difficulty? Now, let's see where we've come from. Creation is a creation from nothing. What does that mean? All that is not God has come forth from God as an emanation, a pouring forth. Though the creature is distinct from the Creator, he is being itself, infinite fullness of being, and we are finite participants in being, nonetheless, there is no distance separating him from us. Our being itself is our relation to him, and his thought and will is trained upon us, focused upon us, steady upon us from eternity. Therefore, there's a profundity of relation of creature to Creator, and a corresponding profundity of relation of creator to creature. We come to recognize all of this if we just come to understand reality appropriately. If we see that everything is contingent, it could have been otherwise, it need not have been, and therefore it is all gift, a gift that's accounted for by his creative act, and that I can come to accept this in my freedom, I can come to take joy in it, and then I meet the problem of suffering and evil, and what do I do in the face of it? Do I hold to this truth, or do I throw the toys out of the pram? If I hold to it, I'm really recognizing the truth of reality and the truth of my being. Now, the last thing we're going to go through, and then we'll open up for our questions and conversation, is, well, how does this mean that we are to enter into relationship with God? What I've described here so far today is a metaphysical relation to God. The rock has a relation to God just like I do metaphysically, or the plant or the animal. But we're not just meant for a metaphysical relation to God, we're meant to have a relationship with God. I partly began to deal with that when I dealt with Christianity. We can also deal with it from a purely natural perspective. When God creates, he creates intelligently, and therefore everything is intelligible. When God creates, he creates willfully, and therefore everything bears goodness. Everything bears his love. Therefore, when I look out upon the natural world, I can come to know the mind of God. When I look out upon the history of the natural world, I can come to know the mind of God. When I look at my own being, I can come to know the mind of God. When I look at my own history, the history of my own life, I can come to know the mind of God. Why? Because all of these things are creations. And he's created intelligently. And he's created freely by his will. And therefore I know the divine intellect. I know the divine heart in knowing the things that have been made. In knowing the natural world and the history of the natural world. In knowing my being and its history, in knowing you, my friends, and your history, all of this speaks to me of the Creator. And therefore, his voice is, so to speak, all around me. Now, I've explained that philosophically, but with that use of the word of voice, let's look at it theologically. How does it describe the act of creation in Genesis? God spoke, and there was being. How does it describe in the Gospel of St. John? In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God, and all things were made through him. Without him was not anything made that was made. Now this means that everything has come through the Word of God. Everything is, so to speak, a mini-word of the Word that is the second person of the Trinity. And therefore, if I just think about the world, if I come to know the world and its history, I think about God's thought for the world, his creative thought for human history. If I come to know the goodness of things, I come to know his creative will for things being. And then I can enter into a dialogue with God, with my life. I can respond to what I've come to know. I can act out of the goodness I've recognized. Now notice here, this is nothing different than just being human. Being human means looking out upon the world and thinking about things. Being human means responding to the goodness of the world. It motivates our action. Now, we can stop at the things themselves. That is understandable and that is good. I choose in itself. Or we can come to recognize that it has a source. It has a creative source. It has a thought of the Creator. It has a will of the Creator. And therefore, I can come to my relation to him in everything. Everything that I think about is his communication to me. Every action I perform is motivated by the goodness he puts before me. And therefore, I can come to understand my life as a response to his creative act, his creative thought, and his creative will. And again, this is nothing else than just living as human, but it's now understanding the proper depth of what it means to live as human, to see that everything has come forth from him and to act out of ourselves in relation to it. Now, let's just think about this really simply. If you think truly, you think according to the divine mind. If you will well, you will according to the divine will. That is, you think about what he has first thought about. You will what he has first willed. And therefore you enter into a collaborative relationship with him, a personal dialogue with your very life. And then you can also pray. That is, you can also set your thought and heart toward God in an act of particular dialogue. Prayer is a particular dialogue, but prayer is taking place in this more general dialogue. To be a creature is to be said in relation to him. To understand the world is to hear his word. To respond to its goodness is to respond to his will. Now, I do all of this all of the time, but I ought to be cognizant, at least some of the time, that I'm setting myself in relation to him. And when I do so, then I can really begin to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior. Because if I don't recognize what he has given in creation, how will I recognize the true value of what he has redeemed? Because what he redeems is creation. What he redeems is the human creature. And if I don't understand how he's naturally present to me in this metaphysical, philosophical way, I won't be able to understand the higher key of his divine revelation, what he's communicating in the liturgy, in the sacred text, in the tradition, in the interpretation of the magisterium. All of these things will begin to make more sense to me if I'm attentive to the word he's speaking to me here and now. So let's make this really concrete. I'm a married man and I have children. 4 children and 1 on the way, due over Christmas. Hopefully he'll come a little bit early, little boy. Where do I hear the word of God in my life? Well, I hear it in the voice of my wife or in the cry of a child. That is, these are creatures that God has given to me and he's communicating to me through their cry. And if I respond, if I think well about them, and if I respond with goodness, which I don't a lot of the time, I'm not great, it's easy to speak a great game, it's very difficult to actually do it, then I'm responding to his thought and responding to his will for me. Or if you're a friar like Father Patrick, he hears the voice of God in his brother friars. He hears the will of God in the obedience he gives to his superiors. So this is a very ordinary thing. It's just the course of human life. And all I've attempted to do today is to redirect our understanding to its origin and to recognize that life is much deeper than we expect. It's very ordinary, but there's this extraordinary backdrop. God is behind all things, in all things, and most intimately. And this is all it is to believe in creatio ex nihilo, a creation from nothing, because everything that is not him has come forth from him and is therefore a communication by him to us who can understand. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even $1 helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.